Thank you, Brother Si. Just a bit of a froggy throat this morning, so I'm not contagious, I'm sure. So I suppose the exhortation this morning is exhortation 1.5. If you've got a paper program for the Ecclesia, you'll notice that today was supposed to be Ben Worsnop, but Ben did Nathan's exhort back on May 26, I think it was. And Nathan was going to do today, but Nathan's at Bible school, so it didn't work. Then there was Jamie. I see Jamie was on the plan for last week. He was announced, but Jamie can't come. So Jeff was going to exhort for us today, but Jeff is not very well. So me, you've got me. Actually, if I add another one onto that, so Lionel and I had a discussion through the week, because Lionel and Sharon are away in Northland the next two Sundays. So Lionel said, Mark, he said, would you like me to exhort because I'll be away for the next two? And I said, oh, I've got some thoughts anyway, so I'll share them today, and Lionel can be off the hook for another time. So, change is good. Does anyone know who said that? With a Jamaican accent. Change is good.
Bob Marley.
Bob Marley, no. Close, yeah. So, 1997, a famous baboon called Rafiki said that. Ah, change is good, he said. Does anyone else know what wise old Rafiki said? He said about six or eight things, actually, and all are pretty telling. So he first meets the young lion Simba, and he says to Simba, oh, he talks about his father Mufasa, and Simba says to Rafiki, you know my father? And Rafiki says, correction, I know your father. He's alive. I'll show him to you. And of course, you know the story how Rafiki leads Simba to the pool of water, and he parts the reeds, and Simba looks down into the water, and he's supposed to be seeing his father. He says, it's just my reflection. He said, I want you to look closer. Of course, then he starts to realize, of course, that his father Mufasa lives in Simba, in the sense that all that Mufasa stood for, he wanted Simba to stand for. And of course, that's the change point for Simba, and he knows he needs to go back to Pride Rock to take up his responsibilities. So, change is good. Fifth time for exhortation. So, of course, we get a lot of encouragement from the Lion King. I think the person that wrote the screenplay for the Lion King must have been religious, or certainly had a good sense of Bible principles, because there's a lot of underlying principles that come out of the Lion King that have biblical overtones. So I could spend all day talking about the Lion King, but Matthew chapter 8 is where we're going to spend a bit of time this morning, brothers and sisters. So much to speak about there, as I mentioned. I count six, I think it is. Let me just find my notes here. Yes, six accounts in Matthew chapter 8 where Jesus has personal interaction with folk. And up until Matthew chapter 8, we don't have Jesus personally talking to people. He talks to crowds. And I'll give you a good example of that. Back in chapter, on my note again, Matthew chapter 4. So at the end of Matthew chapter 4, as a good summary, verse 23, Jesus went about all Galilee, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom, healing all manner of sickness and all manner of disease among the people. And Jesus' fame went throughout all Syria, and they brought unto him all sick people that were taken with diverse diseases and torments, and those which were possessed with devils, and those which were lunatic, and those that were paralyzed, and he healed them. Verse 25, and there followed him great multitudes of people from Galilee, from Decapolis, from Jerusalem, from Judea, and beyond Jordan. And so we get the idea that there's a huge amount of people from all sorts of areas of Israel following Jesus. You've got the people in the north, in Galilee, the Decapolis, the 10 towns. You've got Jerusalem and Judea in the south. You've got across Jordan on the east. And so there's this huge array of people that are joining Jesus to listen to him. And he goes up on a mountain and he gives to us the what we call the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6 and 7, to this great crowd of people. Come over to chapter 8, and Matthew presents a little bit of a different insight into the work of Jesus. And it's away from the crowds, and it's now talking to individuals. And of course, those individuals have always been there, but now Matthew wants to introduce them to us, and I think for lessons. In Matthew 8, there are six accounts of folk that Jesus spoke to. If we include Peter's mother-in-law, it makes number seven, but we're not told of any personal interaction with Peter's mother-in-law. So there's no way I'm going to spend any amount of time on all six. So I've chosen a couple. The first one is the leper. But there's the centurion, there's the scribe, there's the disciple, there's the 12 on the boat, and of course there's Legion and his friend. And to each one of these people, or groups of people, he says just one thing, or just two things, just very brief. But I think in those one or two things that Jesus says, there's real lessons for us to help us. And we could ask ourselves, so if Jesus came to my house, what would he say to me in one or two words or one or two sentences? What is the lesson that Jesus would say to me? He would look into me, into my heart, and say, Mark, this is what you need to hear from me. And this is the words of Jesus. And I think captured in these six people is very pithy, right to the point, gazing into our hearts, sort of information that Matthew is sharing with us. So, if Jesus spoke to me, if Jesus spoke to you, what is it he would say? You have a need, I have a need. And Jesus looks into our hearts, he looks into our minds, and he gives us an answer that we need personally. To some, Jesus is recorded as just speaking once, although likely, if they became a close disciple, he would of course follow up conversations, like we learn with the disciples. The first interaction Jesus has with the disciples, we're going to go there now, is chapter 8, and it sort of begins in verse 23, where again there's the crowds that are around him. So he enters into a ship, and the disciples follow him. And the recorded words that Jesus says to them as they woke him up from fear, he says in verse 26, so why are you fearful, O ye of little faith? And of course Jesus then gets up, as we know, and he rebukes the wind and the waves, and there's this calm, absolute calm, just still. Like my dad would say, like a mill pond. I don't think I've ever seen a mill pond, but Margaret, have you seen a mill pond? Yeah, apparently very still water. So the NIV puts it the other way. It says, you of little faith, why are you so fearful? And is that something that Jesus might say to me? Is it something that Jesus might say to you? And of course, we have so many fears. And if we sort of take that down a level or two, we have anxieties, we have worries. And Jesus is saying is, why is that? Why is that? I am here. I'm right here. You might think I'm asleep. You might think that I'm not active in the world today, but I'm here. And of course, the key is the disciples and we need to invite him in. Tell Jesus what the problem is. Tell him. We're going to perish, Lord. That was their concern. What are our concerns? Can we talk to our Father? Can we talk to Jesus about the things that are going on in our lives that are troubling us? So even wind and waves are no problem. You just need to talk about your worries. So the second one I've chosen is that the leper that Liz read for us. And the leper at the beginning of the chapter has a chronic need. He's really in need of help, and no one could help him. He was an outcast. I mean, in Israel, leprosy was such that you were living outside the camp, living outside of society, shunned by people. I mean, it's this whole, in the law, it's the cover the lip, isn't it? And call out unclean, unclean, so that people are aware. So it's a tragic story, and it's full of misery, and it's about loneliness. But in such a, and the way I read it, the leper, in such a gentle way, the man asked Jesus, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." And of course, if we were to compare the Luke and the Mark accounts, both those accounts tell us that the man fell down at Jesus' feet, or he was on his knees. And that could be the act of worship that Matthew describes here in verse 2. "Behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, 'Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean.'" And so worship, well, it could be about being on your knees, because that's a posture of worship that the scriptures present to us. But it could also be this aspect of submission, that the man says to Jesus, "Lord, if you are willing." And so he's saying, in a sense, "Look, I'm a leper. I have so many needs. I need help. You can help me, Lord." But he doesn't say that, does he? It was in his head. He says, "Lord, if you're willing." And that in itself can be a form of worship, because my will needs to conform to the Lord's will. And that's an act of submission. And in a sense, that's worship, isn't it? Because we're recognizing that there's something bigger and something greater than each of us that we need help with. It was just an aside thought anyway, but so worship then is described perhaps by Matthew as a form of recognizing God's will for our lives. But Jesus' reply to the leper is equally full of compassion and is a caring way of expressing himself. He says, he put forth his hand and he touched the man, I'm sure. Put forth his hand. He didn't have to do that, did he? Because Jesus could, like that. Or he could just speak to the wind and the waves, like that, and it's done. So he touches the man. He reaches out, and there's this aspect of solidarity, isn't there? That I'm just like you. I know how you feel. And so with that one sentence, Jesus says to him, "I am willing, be clean." And of course, the lesson for us, if we can hear the lesson, if it applies to us, are we full of uncleanness? Whatever that uncleanness might be, and we have uncleanness, let's be sure about that. Lord, if you're willing. And of course, the Lord is willing. He showed us how willing he is by presenting his life as a sacrifice. So I am willing, he says. And then he says something interesting, doesn't he, in verse 4. He said, "See, thou tell no man, but go thy way, show thyself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them." So it's, in a sense, Jesus said, I want your actions to be the witness to me, said Jesus. You could say a lot of things about what's happened this day, but I don't want you to say anything. I want you to go and be a testimony in what you do. And of course, the testimony that Jesus is asking of is, go to the priest, offer the gift specified in the law, back in Leviticus, about how your leprosy can be cleansed. It's been suggested to me that likely this is the very first time in the whole of Israelite history that a leper has ever done that, because leprosy wasn't a healed thing. We know of a few people that were healed of leprosy, Naaman, but he wasn't an Israelite. So maybe the priest would stand there, the man would bring in his offering, and he'd say, "What's that for?" He said, "Well, it's for leprosy, I'm cleansed." And maybe that was the first time ever that an offering was brought for the healing of a leprous man, and Jesus did it. So maybe Jesus would say to us, "I want your actions to speak for the work that's happening in your life. You don't have to say anything, just do. Do Christianity. Be a disciple." Words, as we know, can be taken all sorts of ways, often the wrong way. And actions often, as we say, speak louder than words. And actions are hard to misunderstand. Words easily misunderstood, but not actions. Yes, so that's our two. I suppose as you're doing your readings, keep an eye out for it. I mean, if you jump over to chapter 9, Jesus' personal interactions with the man let down through the roof. "Son, be of good cheer. Your sins are forgiven you." And of course, those are wonderful words for each of us as we come to think about Jesus, we come to think about the aspect of forgiveness that frees us from the burden of sin. "Be of good cheer, your sins are forgiven you." Well, just briefly then, finish off with the centurion, and we won't go any further than just a couple of things with him in verse 13. The centurion had this great need. A beloved servant was sick, he was paralyzed, grievously tormented. He was in a real way. And the master, the centurion, had compassion on him, wanted to have healing. But think about what Jesus says to the centurion, and think about, is it a message that I need to hear? Jesus says to the centurion, "Go your way, and as thou hast believed, so be it done to you." And we know the servant was healed from that very same hour, the self-same hour. But the message of Jesus is, go your way, as you have believed, so be it done to you. And I think, you know, that could be about prayer. It could be about things that we ask of God. Ask in belief, James says. Don't be like a wave that's sort of on the sea, tossed and turned and frothing and bubbling and then flat. Don't be like that. Go your way believing. Because as you've asked, so will it be done to you. And that's this prayer of faith, isn't it? Ask in faith. That's what James, the Lord's brother, goes on to tell us. So then, as we conclude, what is it then that Jesus might say to me? What is it that Jesus might say to you? The emblems that are before us are presented to us as a witness to what Jesus asks of us to share together in. To believe in Jesus, believe he is alive, believe he is a powerful force at work in you, at work in us, as we come now to remember Jesus in the way that he's asked.